The views expressed in this program are those of the participants.
I'm Danielle Metz.
And I'm Robert Vaughn.
And this is the Danielle Metz Show. I've tried to avoid discussing this topic just because there's so much that goes into it, but I was watching Jordan Peterson and Brett Weinstein on the Joe Rogan Experience episode 1006 on September 1st of this year, and a quote that Peterson made caught my attention. He was discussing how postmodernism is rooted in Marxism, and he was discussing how that was based on the fact that resentment, and I'm quoting here, resentment-driven anti-capitalism, there are reasons to criticize capitalism, obviously, but it's this underground resentment-driven anti-capitalism that is, I think, one of the fundamental motivators. While I agree with his general sentiment here, he doesn't fulfill explaining what the reasons are to criticize capitalism, obviously. He sort of just left that there. And then you get through the episode a little further, and you get the kind of idea that he was talking about the inequality of income that naturally comes from capitalism, because you have people that are going to produce more, as like the Pareto distribution thing that he gets into. And if you look at some of his other episodes of talks he's gotten into, he gets into really big, in-depth discussions about that. And he goes on to describe how that destabilizes society. So whether we should have a redistribution of wealth, he seems to think on the surface that that might be a good thing, but he cannot seem to find a way to do that equitably or even rationally. So he defends capitalism the whole rest of the way, but he seems to think there's still a problem with it. And my understanding of capitalism has always been very rudimentary, in the sense that, is that not just voluntary trade between two people, two individuals? Is that not what capitalism essentially is?
Well, I watched the segment you're referring to, and I have a couple of things to say on it. First
sure.
of all, the definition of capitalism, Karl Marx was the one who really coined the term first, at least in this political concept. And another thing is that he took, as you say, the natural trading tendency of people, value for value, or the natural way to invest capital, either as a farmer or somebody who has money in the bank, and he made it an ism. He made it politicized by calling it capitalism. And that opened up a whole Pandora of us and them.
The classists.
Well, of course, you could have a dirt poor farmer who is a capitalist by definition. He has capital in the land, and he uses it hopefully to feed his family, and if there's any surplus, that's profit. A person who invests in a pension fund, like a teacher, is a capitalist because they have excess income that they're putting away and investing in other businesses, usually by a third party, but still, that makes them a capitalist. And then you have the political definition, and I think when you're looking at Peterson and Brett and Joe talking about capitalism, without defining it, it's very easy to get confused as to what they mean. Now, in the context of their discussion, they're talking about neo-Marxism, postmodernism, and Marxism itself, which, of course, you're going back 130 years or so to the definition of Marx and Das Kapital. And at that time, capitalism, I think, had a different connotation than it does today. Today, it's used as a pejorative because of, you have, for example, the Enron scandal. You have crony capitalism, which in my mind does not exist.
I don't put those two together.
No, no, no. That doesn't exist. Cronyism is one thing which can only occur in a corrupt socialist society. And you have capitalism. Now, you and I both define capitalism. Let me define it, and you either agree or disagree. We use the Ayn Rand objectivist definition of capitalism. Basically, in a political sense, it is the separation of the government from the economy, in a broad sense. In a more specific sense, the government acts as a referee in the economy. In other words, it is not a player; it's a referee. It doesn't print money. It doesn't act as a bank.
It doesn't pick winners and losers.
It doesn't subsidize, right?
You have to have the loss to have the profit.
Exactly, right. It just recognizes that people trade, some are winners, some are losers, and it stands back and lets people do this trade and only comes in when there's a dispute.
When you contracts fraud, if there's a problem, then that's it.
That's our definition of capitalism. Now, what Jordan B. Peterson meant when he said that capitalism can be criticized, I don't know that he's using that definition. I think he's looking at business today.
And corporatism, business, as it were.
Corporatism, yes, perhaps. And capitalism as it's defined by our enemies, the left. As a pejorative, you know, as something that has to be regulated. You cannot have unfettered capitalism.
And Brett came up with that concept repeatedly throughout the, well, yes, we all agree free markets are good,
but
you can't, if you have, he actually went on to say about the fact that if you had unfettered free markets and you have one person who's moral and you have one person who realizes that they can do anything they want to make a profit, that the person who's moral is never going to succeed against the person who will just do anything. And I'm like, well, that's the whole point of having a government. They're the referee.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do anything you want. That's not what capitalism is.
There's
they
your
think
point,
free
right
markets
there.
Are Wild West, which and the Wild West wasn't even that wild, but they think it's the Wild West of everybody just does whatever they want to do based on their own ethics and morality without any consequences of rules.
Right, so if they're using what I would call cronyism as an example, well, sure, that can be used, that can be criticized. But if they're using capitalism in the term that you and I would normally define it as simply the separation of the government from the economy, except as a referee, then I have a problem. If that's the way they were using it, I would disagree with them. But I don't think it is. I think they're putting it into the context of their discussion, which was income inequality based on cronyism.
Yes, but I got more of the sense of the income inequality as meaning that because they're both psychologists, or I can't remember what Brett Weinstein
is. He's an evolutionary biologist.
That's
yeah.
right. That they believe that human beings are just naturally envious. So if you have income inequality, then you're going to have civil unrest.
Yes, I heard him say that. Jordan Peterson said that first, I think. And there's an element of truth to it, but I don't think that I would take it to the degree that he was implying. For example, during the 19th century America, there was a lot of unrest, most of it probably due to slavery and the Civil War. But if you take that element out, there was a lot of poverty there. By our standards today, people were dirt poor.
Literally
dirt poor. In Haiti, they're eating dirt, literally.
Yes.
That's poverty. Now, was there a lot of unrest in the United States because of this poverty and income inequality? I don't think so.
When everybody's equally poor, there's nothing to be envious about.
Well, no, I don't even think that, because in the 19th century, you had the Rockefellers, you know, you had Standard Oil, you had a lot of rich people,
but
the Vanderbilts and all
those. But they were far removed from the community. When you had a community that was dirt poor, mm-hmm. everybody within that community was dirt poor. The Rockefeller, that's like a fairy tale at that point. The way Brett brought it up was the fact that we have TVs now, and we're looking at all these rich people, and it's disassociated from reality, so our envy is, we get envious about things that we can never achieve, as opposed to the guy who had, I believe his example was, he has a farm, his neighbor has a farm, his neighbor's farm is more successful than him,
mm-hmm.
so he tries to work on figuring out how to make his farm more successful. Where now, because everything is entertainment, you got the Keeping Up with the Kardashians, you've got all that stuff where we're looking at an unrealistic level of achievement for quote unquote the average individual, which I don't know why anybody would want to keep up with the Kardashians to begin with, although that wasn't the example he actually used, but that's what he was implying. I thought they kind of had a really low, what's the word I'm looking for? They kind of make people sound really just petty and envious and not smart enough to figure things out on their own or achieve on their own.
It's interesting because Jordan Peterson, of course, is a clinical psychologist and his clients are damaged people, more or less.
Yes.
You know, he sees a lot of the worst of society like a policeman would. And I wonder if it's actually a fair and accurate assessment of society, because as you're alluding there, a lot of people are not envious.
No.
Some people are jealous. Hey, I can be jealous. I'm jealous of Bill Gates's money. Hey, I'd love to have that kind of cash. I'm not envious of it. No. I don't begrudge him his wealth. He earned it, as do many, many people who have incomes higher than I don't begrudge them that.
It
I'm not envious
of it. Gives you something
to
shoot for.
Exactly.
Oh, you mean you can make this money? Well,
now,
I'm going to find a way. I'm going to try to make that money, too.
You,
or at least just be comfortable. Who needs all that money anyway?
You and I are comfortable. As a matter of fact, most of the people in our country, Canada, are comfortable. And so forth. We don't necessarily see the unrest. But what I was trying to get at with the example of the United States around the turn of the last century, where I did not think that there was a lot of unrest, even though there was a lot of poverty and a lot of inequality. Perhaps the Pareto curve at that time was a lot steeper than it is today. However, I don't think that there was unrest because there was also a respect for the rule of law. And in countries like in Western societies where there is a respect for the rule of law and an implicit and tacit understanding of why you need laws and the Judeo-Christian ethic, if you will, of why you do not covet your neighbor's goods, then you're not going to get the unrest that you might see in a Russian society under the Tsar, or a repressive society in South America or Asia or Africa. You're going to see a lot of unrest there if there's income inequality, because they don't have the same rule of law that we do here. There's no respect for the rule of law
there's
in a lot of these countries.
No equality of opportunity. There is no way out of where they are.
That's another element of it, sure.
That is a huge...
There's certainly, I don't think, one reason why there would be unrest because of the Pareto curve and a lot of people in poverty. I think one of it is a respect for the rule of law. Another one, or not. And the other one, of course, is, as you say, when you're in zero income levels, there doesn't seem to be a way out of it. And in a socialist countries now like ours, I would have to label us, you've got welfare. So there really is no excuse whatsoever for any social unrest due to income inequality, unless you're really talking about greed.
Well, I think also the problem, and something that they didn't address, is that a lot of the political leaders are fomenting this unrest. I mean, you see it particularly in the States, the division between the blacks and the whites and the haves and the have-nots and the illegal immigrants and the legal immigrants, and they're trying to parse everybody out. And the best way to do that is to kind of nudge them like, well, look what they have and you don't have it.
Vote for us and we'll get it for you.
Yep, vote for us and we'll get it
for
you.
See, that's the thing about politics is that, again, you're right, they're fomenting this inequality because they love victims, especially the left, which is basically almost every politician.
I was going to say, and who's on the right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Except for us, of course.
So on the left, the socialists, the communists, the fascists, the Nazis, those kinds of people, they're always looking at, oh, look at those, the Jews. The Jews got too much. You know, they're the bankers, right?
They control Hollywood.
They control Hollywood, yeah. They can charge interest, which is basically one of the fundamental reasons why people are anti-Semitic, is because back in the day, as a Catholic, which at the time was the only church in the Western society, in Western world, you could not charge interest for loans, and only the Jews could because it was not against their religion. So people hated the Jews because they didn't think that they should bear interest. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, there's a victim culture. Politician's job, almost, it seems, a terrible politician, would be to look at class structure, make an us versus them, make a victim-perpetrator society, and therefore, you're right, they are fomenting dissent.
And create the other.
Create the other. So when Jordan Peterson talks about income inequality creates violent societies, which are ripe for overthrow and revolution, I would say only under certain conditions, and one of those conditions would be, as you correctly pointed out, a political atmosphere of fanning the flames of this income inequality.
Instead of saying, look, this is the land of opportunity, pull yourself up, you can do anything, you can achieve anything that you want to achieve. They go, well, you know, no, you're part of this class. You can't do it because of this class over here. And that's what they do. They need the victims to get the votes.
Exactly. Yeah. So while it's absolutely fascinating to watch Jordan Peterson and Brett Weinstein and Joe Rogan talk about all these things, and to pick on poor old Jordan for this one little offhanded comment about, oh, yes, you can criticize capitalism.
Oh, no, he just knows I do it out of love.
I love watching those guys. It's absolutely fascinating.
Joe Rogan was excellent in that as well. He was very quiet through the first little bit, and I thought maybe he's not going to speak very much. And then he really got into it and he's a very good interviewer. He knows how to let his guests talk for 2 hours and 45 minutes in a row.
Well, we're talking university professors, and that is their job. They go to work and talk to students, so it's not no difficulty for them. But I think it's very interesting that you picked up on that thing, because just like you, my hackles go up whenever I hear anybody talk about capitalism.
Especially if it's somebody that you respect and admire, and you hear just that one little off, and especially when he emphasized the word obviously, and it was just, he could go, you can criticize capitalism, but he went like, obviously, and I'm like, no, not so obvious, Jordan. Not so obvious.
Again, the obvious nature of it is, what did he mean by capitalism? I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to say, I think he means cronyism.
And he comes from such an intellectual standpoint, not from an economic or moral standpoint. He looks at the effects, so it's hard to peg him as to where he stands, because he's coming at it from all sorts of different directions, you know, income inequality over here, but equal of opportunity over here, and so it's like, okay, do you like capitalism or not?
Exactly, and you know, he comes at it from a perspective that a Richard Feynman, as a physicist, looked at reality. Feynman basically says you can't talk about the whys of physics, only that they are. The laws of nature are what they are. Existence exists, as Rand would put it. And I think Jordan Peterson is almost saying the same thing when he says, look, this is the state of society. This is the state of individuals. This is how it is. But that doesn't necessarily mean that as individuals who have free will, we cannot change things, unlike the laws of physics, which are immutable. Human behavior is not.
And he seems to be trying to figure out exactly how that would be implemented and what you would do. He doesn't seem to be quite firm on what the resolution to the perceived inequalities in society are, but he recognizes the danger there, but he doesn't know what to do about it. And there's an innocence to that.
I think he recognized as well that it's a law of society, if you will, that there's going to be a Pareto curve. There's going to be income inequality. What he was trying to get a grasp on for a solution was, how do you make it so that when you have people in the lower echelons of the economic strata, that they don't revolt? And the answer, of course, is
capitalism.
And the rule of law, which is capitalism. You can't really have capitalism without a government which respects the rule of law and contract.
Yep, contract is that's the basis of capitalism. It's a contract between two people. When I go, okay, I will pay you this for that, and you go, okay, I'll pay you this for that, and if you defraud on it, then you can't have capitalism. That's our anarchy.
You know what? It just occurred to me. There's one word which also describes how you can have a large proportion of society who are necessarily, well, poor or lower middle class or whatever, in one geographic area who will not revolt, and the same proportion in a geographic area who will revolt, if they have hope. If they have hope. If you're poor, but you know that if you work hard, you can succeed.
Yes.
Then I think that you will not revolt.
And like they pointed out, too, if it's not just necessarily you, but if you see that your children or your family members are going to be able to build on what you've accomplished, something that you can work towards to provide for your family. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. Take care. Behave yourself. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks. Cheers.
If you've enjoyed this presentation, visit www.justrightmedia.org for more programming that's not right-wing, it's just right.